Okay, we're going to begin here with the Mishnah, with the new Perek. Homer Mishkali Alai, someone who says that I'm going to donate my weight to the Mikdash, notain Mishkalo, then you give your weight. Im Kesef, if he said that he's going to give his weight in silver, then Kesef, he gives it in silver. Bim Zahav, if he said he's going to give it in gold, Zahav, he gives it in gold. Maase B'ima Shel Yarmatia, there was a situation, a story, in which the mother of this young woman, Yarmatia Sh'amra Mishkal Biti Alai, that my daughter's weight I will bring to the Mikdash. Va'altal Yerushalayim, she comes up to Yerushalayim, Shakla Mishkala Bezahav. She went ahead and weighed the baby and paid it in gold. Mishkal Yadi Alai says the weight of my arm I will donate to the Mikdash. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mimale Chavit Mayim, you fill up a barrel full of water. Umachniso Ad Marpeko, you stick your arm into that water until the marpeik. Now here there is a machloke between Rashi and Tosafot about what the marpeik is. Rashi says the marpeik is atzil, shikorim aishila. It is your armpit. Whereas Tosafot says that the marpiko is actually the elbow, the koda, the elbow. Now, I'm pointing out the machloke now. There is a nafka mina la alocha that comes up later on the second half of today's daf, which we'll come back to at that point. So I just want to make you aware of the machloket here between Rashi and Tosafot as to whether marpiko here means the armpit, whether marpiko means the elbow. Then after he's done that and he's displaced the water, he replaces that water that has been displaced, mibsar chamor batzamot vigidim, with the flesh, the bones and sinews of a chamor. As Rashi points out, that the mishkal basar chamor ki mishpal basar adam, the weight of the basar chamor is similar to the weight of adam. It's the most similar to adam. And if you replace it, notein l'tocha, ad shitib malay, until it fills up, until the barrel, the chavit is refilled to the top, and then you'll know how much your arm weighs. I'm Rav Yosef here, efshar lekavein basar keneged basar, batzamot keneged atzamot. How can you get it exact? Human arm and the chamor are different. The human arm might have a different ratio of flesh to bone. How do you get it all right? Ela shaminet ayad kamahi ru'uya lishkol. It's all an estimation, Rabbi Yossi says. We look at the arm. How much should the arm weigh as a percentage of his total body weight? And based on the estimation, that's what he will donate to the Mikdash. So the Gemara says, my im kesef kesef im zahav zahav. Now I explained it in the Mishnah based on the conclusion of the Gemara already. But what does it mean that if it's silver, it's silver, if it's gold, it's gold? Amar Yehuda Piresh Kesef specified that they're going to bring the weight in silver. Then Kesef, he brings it in silver. Piresh Zahav Zahav. He specified that he's going to bring it in gold, Zahav. Pshito, of course. What else would you think? Ha, Kamash Malan, time of the Piresh. The whole reason in the Mishnah is because he specified what he's going to bring. Ha, lo Piresh. Had he not specified what he's going to pay the weight in, Parta Napshei Bekol Duhu. He can use anything he wants. He can use anything that is weighed to pay out. Kid Rechava, like we have by Rechava, Dama Rechava, Ba'atra the Takle Kufra, in a city where they weigh pitch, Partar Nafshei Afilu B'Kufra, he can give his weight in pitch to the Mikdash. Again, the Gemara says, Pshito. Lotzricha de'ika the Takle, v'ika the Kyle. That not everybody weighs their pitch in that city. Some people weigh it. Some people do it based on quantity or volume. Mao de tema, kaven de kulu lo takle. Lo. Maybe since not everybody weighs pitch, you can't use it. Kamash v'lan, that as long as a good number of people weigh their pitch, there will be enough or a reason for you to give that to the Mikdash in place of your weight. Amra papa, ba'atre de takle shimchi, patar nafshe afilu b'shimchi. In a city where they weigh shimchi, you can even use shimchi to pay off the amount over here. Shimchi are bitzalim, onions, as Rashi points out. So in a city where they weigh their onions when they sell them, you can use onions to pay off the Mikdash. Zumar says again, pshito, if it's something that they weigh, and you're donating your weight, then why couldn't you give it? Tzricha debada deshakle shadu treitilta. Problem is that after you weigh the onions,
the customary practice is actually to add in two or three more onions into the pile. Or according to Tosafot, even after they've weighed them, they add a little more onto the weight. So you see here that they're not being exact about the weight. Because either after they finished weighing it, they throw in a couple more onions, or they're noteya, they don't weigh it exactly evenly. So maybe that should be classified as something something that is weighed, and you wouldn't be able to use it to pay off your obligation to give your weight to the Mikdash.
So can you use those onions based on that weighing system? Ma'udatema batel Torat Mishkal. Because of that, the weight factor is not relevant. Kamash one, that it's still considered to be weighing and sold by weight. And since it's sold by weight, you can use that to pay off the Mikdash. Okay, now the Gemara continues. Ma'aseh bi'ima shel Yamatia. We had that story in the Mishnah about the mother of Yamatia, Ma'aseh l'Istor. The case that's brought in the Mishnah, is that coming to undermine what we said before? Before we said, if you specify gold, it's gold. Specify silver, it's silver. Then we have Ima Shomachia, didn't specify anything. And then she brings it in gold. Why is she bringing in gold? The Gemara says, no, Chasuri Mechzera, the Mishnah is missing the transition between the first halacha and the case. Achitani, Vim Adam Chashuvu. If the person is a significant individual, Afagab Delo Piresh, even though they didn't specify what they were going to give, Lefi Kvodo Amdinan. We assess them based on what would be proper for their stature. Based on their stature, they're going to pay the Mikdash. Over here, this woman was very wealthy. So the fact that she didn't specify doesn't mean she can pay with anything. We assume that she would pay with Zahav. So therefore, there are actually three categories. One category is that if you specify, then you give based on what your specifications are. Another category is if you didn't specify and we can assess you based on your economic ability to pay and your stature, then we assume that you should pay based on that. The last one is if we don't have any of those, you can pay with anything that is weighed, which we saw before by Rechava and we saw by Rav Papa. You can use even pitch or onions. And the proof to that is that you pay based on the person's stature because of the case that they bring afterwards. She paid in gold, even though she hadn't specified in gold. I'm Rav Yehuda, Omer Komati Alai. Person who says that I will donate my height to the Mikdash, no tain sharvit she'enu nikfaf. He gives a staff that does not bend, because Komati means my height. My height means that it's a staff that acts like my height, standing upright. Never you have to give a staff that's thick enough that it won't bend over. Now what the staff is made of will be dependent on the first half of the Mishnah, as Rashi points out. If you said it's from silver, it's silver. From gold, it's gold. If not, then you just have to give a staff of any material that is strong enough and upright. Melo komati, if he says I'm going to donate the entirety of my height, then he's notain sharvit hanikfaf. Then he can give a staff, but a staff that does bend over. Not necessarily that is upright and straight, because that's not komati, but melo komati means that it's the same length as my height, but it doesn't mean that it acts like my height. In the first case, we're saying not only should it be the length of your height, from your toes until your head, but also should be komati. It should be like my height, which means upright, and is wide, strong enough to hold yourself upright. And the second one, you're just giving malo komati, is giving the measurement, the size of the pole, not dictating the qualities of the pole. Therefore, can even be a staff that bends. Smeiteve, komati alai, malo komati alai, notein shavich, eno nikvaf. So here we have a braita, a tosefta, that says that there's no difference whether you use the term komati or use the term melo komati, you'd still give a staff that does not bend. So it says, Hu damar ki Rabbi Akiva. He holds this memra that we're bringing over here, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, is based on the sheet of Rabbi Akiva, the daik lishna yitero. Because we know from Rabbi Akiva that Rabbi Akiva says if you say something unnecessary, then we have to medayik from your unnecessary statement that you meant more than you really said. It's not the Mishnah from Baba Vatra. Lo et abor, velo et adot. When he makes a sale of a house, it's not included in that is the bor and the dot. The difference between them is a bor is a cistern where you dug into the ground. A dot is where you built it up with stones and walls around it, but a pit as well. So avopisha kadab umgavaroma. Even if you write that I'm selling you the house, and then umgavaruma down into the ground and up above, you don't sell the boar and the dot. They're not included in the sale. V'tzarich l'kachlo derech divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, yes, the boar and the dot are excluded from the sale, but what you did not exclude from the sale or did not retain for yourself is a way to get to them. And that's because Rabbi Akiva believes that a mocher is mocher b'ayin yafa. When a person sells, he sells in the most generous manner. So when he sells in the most generous manner, he's going to give him everything, except for those things that are excluded. Those things that are excluded automatically are the boar and the dot. But getting to those boar and the dot, that you didn't leave out because you're going to sell in the most generous manner. On the other hand, the chachamim mean enu tzarich. You don't have to do that because mocher is mocher ba'ayin ra'ah. Person sells in the most miserly manner. And therefore, if the bor and dot are going to remain for him, he also left himself a way to get to the bor and dot, and he doesn't have to purchase for himself a way to get there. Umode Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva agrees, this man sharmalo chutz mi elu. The point when he says, chutz mi bor vidot, that you don't have to purchase away. Now, bor and dot were automatically left out of the sale. So why are you writing in the sale, chutz mi bor vidot? You don't need to write that. That happens without you adding it into the contract. So Rabbi Akiva says, the fact that you added it into the contract, we're going to say that means that you were thinking of something more than just a bor and dot. You would have gotten the bor and dot without writing it in. The fact that you wrote it in now means that you're going to get something more than that. What's that more? Is that we're going to give you a derech. We're going to give you a way to get there, even though normally Rabbi Akiva believes you don't get a derech. So you see, from Rabbi Akiva, Alma, Keva, Delo Tzorich, since it was unnecessary to write it, Vika Amara, nevertheless you wrote it, the Tfuya Milta Kaate. We have to assume that it's more expansive in its meaning. We're going to give you more than you should have gotten otherwise. So Hachanami, same thing in our case here, Keva, Delo Tzorich, since you don't need to say Malo Komati, you could have just said Komati, Vika Amara, and in the end he says Malo, the Tfuya Milta Kaate. It must be that when he says Malo Komati, it's coming to add something more. Meaning that it's giving us a reason to believe that it's different than just komati. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda says, komati. You have to bring a staff that stands upright and doesn't bend over. Whereas by malo komati, you can bring a staff of that height, but it can be flexible, something that can bend over. And that's because you added in an extra lashon of malo. And malo is going to have some meaning in this context. It has to do something different than just saying komati. Like Rabbi Akiva says, when you exclude the bor and dot from the sale explicitly, even though that was automatically going to happen, that extra language entitles you to a derech, a path, to get to them, even though normally you would not get that path. Wait, first of all, Rabbi Yehuda says that. We're just saying that Rabbi Yehuda is holding like the shita of Rabbi Akiva. The shita of Rabbi Akiva is that whenever you say something unnecessary, it means comes to add something to your statement. So had you just said komati, you would have brought in a staff that doesn't bend. Now that you say malo komati, must be something different than that. What's different than that? A staff that does bend, that's flexible. And that's the Malo Komati adds something to your statement. That's the Tosefta. We asked on Rabbi Yehuda Shita from the Tosefta. Now you do have a good question. The Tosefta, where it says that Komati and Malo Komati mean a Shavit, Shenu Nikrav, who's the author of that? Who's the author of that Breita? That's what Tosefta says, Tema. Breita, Mantanyo, Lo Rabbi Kiva, Lo Rabbanon. He says, I don't know who wrote that. Rabbi Kiva is obviously not the author of that Breita, but he says, even the Rabbanon, their mode, if you do say something that's different, when there's a Yitro Lashon, they agree that it makes a difference. Just over there, in the case of Bor and Dot, you don't need it, because you already got your extra right, according to them. You got the path without having the extra wording there. But they do agree. Had it not been the fact that you got the path, they would agree to Rabbi Kiva's Shita. The Tosavot says he doesn't know who the author of that Breita is, of the Tosefta is. Right now, Ibailahu, Omdi Mahu. By standing up, I'm gonna donate. What does that mean? As Rashi says, Mi Ava Mashma Shavit Komato Alo. Is it the same thing as saying Komati? When I say Omdi, my upright position, is that the same as saying Komati, my height? Then Tosafot over here says, Vayishafresh Kolabayot, all these questions you should say, Be Imtim Salomar. As an Imtim Salomar. If you say that Omdi is the same as Komati, then the next question, Rochavi Mahu. My width. What does it mean by my width? Does it mean that I'm donating something that is my height and my width? Or does it mean I'm donating something that is as long as my width? Mahu. And then again, here it says, Imtim Salomar. If you want to say that it means my height, Yeshivati Mahu. When I'm seated, when I say I'm going to donate my sitting, what's the din in terms of donating my sitting? So here we have a number of explanations of what it means, Yeshivati Mahu. Tosfot actually brings two different interpretations. He says, "Benu Achanan Perish Ayishivato Miamrinan Tzolom Amar Mirosho V'Ad Makom Yishivato." Does it mean from his head until the place where you bend, where you would sit? Shuchatzi Gufo means half of his body. Odilma Kol Gufo Kamar Moshe Yoshev. Or does it mean his entire body when you're sitting, from your feet until your head, but when you're in the sitting position? Or the other, he says, V'Yeshma Fereshim Shivati Ma'u Miamrinan Shurtzon Lamar Shitena Shavit Yachzik Komat Yishivato. When he says yeshivate, means that he says, I'm going to have the shavit be my entire komat yeshivato, the height of when I'm sitting, but not the malo komat amidato, not my full standing height. Maybe it means that it has to be a pole that would take up the amount of space that I would take up when I was seated. So again, different possibilities about what yeshivate means. Then, ovyo mahu, or ovyi, mahu. My diameter, my thickness, what does that mean? Do I mean the thickness of my body? Meaning that I mean a shavit that is as thick and as wide as my body? Or do I mean something that is as long as my thickness? Hekefo, and then again, imtim salomar, that obvi means the entire thickness of my body. Hekefi mahu, my perimeter, my circumference. What does that mean? Does that mean I'm saying something as tall as me with my circumference? Or am I saying something that is the size of my circumference? You can take it, it's flexible, and you can move it around me, and you can move it all the way around me. So all of these, the Gemara leaves as a teiku. We don't know what these lishonot mean. We don't know what the intent of these lishonot are. And therefore, we leave a teiku in all of these of omdi, rochbi, yeshivati, ovyi, and hekefi. We leave them all as unanswered questions. Okay, mishya gal yadi alai. The weight of my arm, I'm going to donate. Tarabanan. So here we saw in the Mishnah, this is the Tosefta as description of what we saw in the Mishnah. Mishkal yadi u'mishkal ragli alai. Person who says, I'm going to donate my weight of my arm or my leg. Rabbi Yehuda omer, mivi chavit u'mamalei mayim. You bring a barrel full of, a pitcher full of water, and fill it up to the top. U'machnis yibiyad ad atzil. And then you put your arm in until the atzil. Again, this is a machloket Rashi and Tosafot. Rashi says atzil means until your armpit, and Tosafot says atzil is until the coda, until the elbow. Uberegel ad harakova. And in the leg, you put it in until the knee. Shokel basar chamor v'gidim. And then you weigh the flesh of a chamor, gidim atzamot, and you mix them in. And then you put it in until the water rises back to filling the barrel completely. Even though we don't have a proof of that, that the basar chamor is similar to the basar of a human being. So over there it's in Yechezkel, in the description of the Mitzrim, it says there that basar chamorim bisaram, that their flesh is like the flesh of the chamorim. So obviously it's in a figurative sense over there, not in a literal sense. But Rabbi Yehuda is using it as a proof that the basar chamorim is similar to the basar of human beings. So one interesting point here, Tosafot brings down from the Ri, that asking why is it that we have to weigh the basar and the atzamot and gidim before you put it in the water? Why don't you put it in the water? Once it rises to the top, then you can weigh what you put in there. Why are you weighing it before you put it in? So Rabbi Elchanan says, and Elchanan, Rabbi Elchanan says, you're right, you can weigh it afterwards. When they mean weigh it, they mean after you put it in. The Ri says, no, you weigh it before you put it in because it'll become waterlogged. And because waterlogged, it'll be heavier than it's really supposed to be. And therefore, you have to weigh it before you put it into the water. Samar Rabbi Yossi, Heyach Efshar Lekavein, Basar Keneged Basar, Gidim Keneged Gidim, Atzamot Keneged Atzamot. How you know you're going to get the right ratio, whether it's an arm or a leg, you're going to get the right ratio of flesh, bones, and sinews from a chamor that you're trying to match up with the human arm or the human leg. So he says, Enoch and Ami, you're right, we can't do that. So Amalei Rabbi Yehuda, Omdim. We estimate. We figure out. We try to estimate what it is. So Amalei Rabbi Yossi, Achi Omdim, Yimodu et Ayad. Why go through all this trouble? Just estimate the weight of the arm, estimate the weight of the leg. In the end, if you're using estimation to get you to the figure anyway, why go through all the trouble filling up the water, putting in the basar chamorim, and trying to estimate how much the ratio of flesh to bone to sinew is? Just estimate the weight of the arm and the leg, period. Why get involved in any of this process? Rabbi Yehuda, kama defshar avdinan. We do as much as we can. As far as we can go by doing it systematically, scientifically, we do. Where we run out of that point, or we can't go beyond that point, then we go to estimation. But we're not going to go for estimation up front when we have the opportunity at least to try to get to something that's more exact. So now Gemara says, Biyad ad atzil. Is it really true that by the yad, it goes up to the atzil? Again, Rashi says, until the armpit. Tosafot says, until the koda, until the elbow. Viramini, we have a question. Here's a Tosafta di Yadayim. We saw this actually in Chulin on Kuf Vav Amud Bet. And this has implications now, the halacha, and that's why I'm discussing the machloket Rashi and Tosafot about the atzil. Kiddush yadayim raglayim b'migdash ad perek. Kiddush yadayim raglayim in the migdash is until the perek. If you remember the Gemara in Chulin, when it brings the quotes, this Tosafta, over there it says that Nitilat yadayim l'chulin ad perek. Nitilat yadayim l'chuma ad perek. Kiddush yadayim raglayim b'migdash ad perek. I'm using the Girsa of the Rif that says ad perek for all of them. Then the Gemara said, well, what's the perek? We need to know what perek you're speaking about for each of these items, for the chulin, the truma, and the kiddush yadayim raglayim. So most people assume that we're speaking about on the hand itself. The furthest one, the one for kiddush yadayim raglayim and the kiddush, is the wrist. It's the joint between the arm and the hand. That's the perek that we're talking about for the Tilat Yadayim for Mikdash. The knuckles are the point, the perek for Truma. Then for Chulin, it's the joint in your fingers. The joint in the middle of your fingers, the one that the thumb has as well. The joint in the middle of your fingers, that'll be for Chulin. So for Chulin, you just have to get the tips of your fingers. For Truma, you go up to your knuckles. And then for Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim, you go up to your wrist. Over there, the Gemara has Rav and Shmuel speak about that, and they say that we're machmir chulin like truma. So that means for truma, you'd only have to wash up to your knuckles, and the same would be true of chulin. And that's what we do on Tisha B'Av and Yom HaKippurim, when we wash the Tilat Yadayim, we wash only until that point, because at that point we know you're chayav. There are many Rishonim who think that ad perek over there means until the wrist, and that even for chulin you have to wash until the wrist. That is a machloket Rishonim in the understanding of that Gemara and chulin, daf kuvava midbet. Over there, Tosafot quotes the Shita of the Rabbeinu Avram. The Rabbeinu Avram says that when we say Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim ad perek, we mean until the elbow. That until the elbow, for Kodshim it's until the elbow, Truma until the wrist, chulin until the knuckles. The Rabbeinu Tam, the Tosafot over there, rejects the position of the Rabbeinu Avram. He says it can't be. He says our Gemara is the proof. We're about to have in our Gemara, and he's going to show from our Gemara that it's a proof that it can't be the elbow. Because our Gemara says, when you put your arm in, when you say Mishkal Yadialai, it's Aratzil. And the Gemara is asking a question from Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim. Well, if you, Kiddush Yadayim V'Raglayim is until the elbow, and we're saying Atzil, according to Tosfot, is till the coda, till the elbow, then why is the Gemara have a question? There's no stira between washing your arms in the Mikdash until the perek, meaning until your elbow, and Atzil, which is your elbow. The only way there can be a difference in opinion is if you believe that washing your hands at a perek in the Mikdash until your wrist, and here you're putting in the yad until the elbow, then there's a difference. But he does point out the Shita Rashi, it works. According to Rashi, Ad Atzil means until your armpit. Until your armpit, that means that when you're doing Kiddush V'Yadayim V'Raglayim until the elbow, that is below the armpit. And it would be a stira. So Tosafot says, L'shita T, that it's elbow. I say it can't be the elbow here. It has to be the wrist for Kiddush V'Yadayim V'Raglayim. According to Rashi, who says that Atzil means until the armpit, that means Kiddush V'Yadayim V'Raglayim in the Mikdash could have been until the elbow. Tosafot rejects that further, and we'll see in a second. He rejects it anyway, but at least L'shita Rashi, this Rabbeinu Avram could work. Gemara says, Dilraita, ad perek. You're right. Enochanami, mi dilraita, Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim is until the perek. For Tosafot, the perek being the wrist. For Rashi, the perek may be possibly, or the Rabbeinu Avram being until the elbow. But, midudarim, when it comes to a neder here, when you say, Yad Mishkal Yadi Alai, Aleich Achar Lashon Bnei Adam. The Darim has nothing to do with halacha, it has to do with how they speak, the colloquialism. What do you call an arm? So most people call an arm. According to Rashi, it means until your armpit is called your arm. According to Tosafot, it means until your elbow. Gemara says, Vidorait ad perek. Is that true? Mina Torah, it's ad perek. Va'agabe tefillin. By tefillin says, Dichtiv yadcho. That you have to put the tefillin on yadcha. This goes back to a Gemara that we have in Menachot Daf Lamed Zayin. And over there, there's also machloket where you put these tefillin. Tanet Bei Menashe Yadcha Zu Kiborit. Yadcha means a kiborit. Now kiborit is a mass of muscle. So that sounds like is different than the other measurements that we have here. The Raita is not the hand, literally the hand, which you just said. You said Bekidish Raglayim Megadayim, you said from the hand down or from the elbow down. Over here, the placement of tefillin on the kiboret, which is called Yadcha, is definitely above that location. Tosafot de Menachot says, where's the kiboret? So we normally translate kiboret as the bicep. He says there's an opinion that says it's the forearm, the muscle mass in the forearm. Tosafot proves from our Gemara that it can't be that. It can't be the muscle that is the forearm because we have three measurements over here. We have a measurement of atzil, we have the measurement of kiboret, and we have a measurement ad perek. And they seem to be moving along. That means that for Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim ad perek means until the wrist. For atzil, if you donate to the Mikdash, that's ad atzil, atzil being the elbow, until the coda. Then we said for tefillin, it's ad kiboret. Kiboret must be something different than elbow and wrist. So that means that if it was on the forearm, that would be below the elbow, or it would be above the wrist. It must be it's something above, even further up than the elbow. And for that he proves that kiboret is the bicep. That's that we have here, three measurements, and that's what the Gemara is going to conclude. So the Gemara answers, Doraita, kiboret, kula. That's right. Mina Torah, up to the bicep, is considered your yad. Min nedarim. In nedarim, therefore it only go up to your elbow. Yidush yadayim v'raglayim b'migdash hilchata gemira lo. That's halacha l'moshe m'sinai that only goes until the wrist. Of course, the other possibility is like the Rabbeinu Avram and Rashi over here, which is when it comes to kiborot tefillin, it's until the bicep. When it comes to l'shon b'nei adam, it means until the atzil, means until the armpit. And then when it comes to kiddush yadayim v'raglayim, it'll be until the elbow. So those are the two possibilities of how to read the Gemara. Obviously, there are nafkaminot. The halacha in terms of the tilat yadayim, how far up do you have to wash your hand? We mentioned before. Machloket Rishonim, whether you have to wash until the knuckles or until the wrist. We are choshesh for those opinions that say until the wrist, and therefore we wash yadayim until the wrist, except for Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, where there's an Issur Rechitza, then we're noted to the shitot that say until the knuckles. As well, for tefillin, we determine that the makoma tefillin is the kiboret, is the bicep, not the forearm. It's obviously not the palm of the hand, but not even the forearm, but up the bicep. And therefore it has to be on the front part of the bicep that is sloping down towards the elbow. That is the proper placement of the tefillin. In both locations, Tosafot uses our Gemara to prove his position. Now he said, "Beregalai d'arkova, by a leg until the knee." Vermini, is that really true? Rigalim, prat, lebalei kabim. Rakab step of the other regal, those that have to come up, it says brat lebalei kabim. Lebalei kabim are those that are amputees. They're missing their feet, as Rashi says. So there it sounds like raglaim, the definition of raglaim is your foot, not until your knee, not the leg until your knee, but rather just your foot. So Gemara says again, bido raito, when we're talking about do raito, a regal means the foot. Binidarim, aleich alachar lashon bnei adam. By nidarim, we go after what people will call the regel. What do the people call the regel? They call up until the knee, they call it the regel. So Gemara says again, vidoraita, prat the gabalei kabim. Is that really true? Mina Torah, that regel only extends to the foot and not above that. V'ha gabi chalitza dichtiv raglo. By chalitza, where it says the woman must remove the shoe from his leg. And there it says, v'tana chalitza mina rakovo lamata chalitza dak shera. As long as she takes it off from below the knee, then it's considered kshera. Again, machloket Rashi and Tosafot. Rashi says, as long as the individual has some of his leg below the knee, then she can unstrap the shoe from that piece of the leg and it'll be fine. Tosafot says that's not true at all. What we're talking about here is how far up is the shoe tied. Like those Roman sandals which tie up higher up on the leg. She can undo the strapping as high as below the knee. Until that point, it's still considered to be taking the shoe off the leg. If it's tied above that, then that's not the case. So Tosafot says it's about the lacing, whereas Rashi is talking about the actual leg of the person. But either way, we end up with chalitza being that the definition of regal is until the knee, or right below the knee. How did you say before that regal min haTorah by regalim, prat lebalei kabim, is just the foot? Where it says, shani hotam, damar kwa, mi'al raglo. It says over there that she must take off the shoe, mi'al raglo. Now the pashtuta pasuk means from on his foot. But now the Gemara is darshim mi'al raglo means to be above his regal. Even from above his regal. Raglo being his foot. Al raglo being something above his foot. Gemara says, yochin the malo mi'arkova nami. So then why is the knee the cutoff point? If it's above his foot, so is the thigh. The thigh is above his foot as well. Gemara says, mi'al, velo mi'al de mi'al. We mean above his foot, but not something that is above his foot. So it'll only be the bone that is situated above his foot, not the bone that is situated above the bone above his foot. So Amar Papa, Shmamina, from this you can see, Istavira, Hai Istavira, the ankle, Ad Aranachit, must reach until the ground. Meaning that the foot, the joint of the foot, the ankle, and the shin, that bone attach, and that's the only separation. I mean, the foot is one unit, and then the bone, being the shin bone, is another bone, and they attach at the ankle. But there's no other joint below that. Because if there was a joint below that, then the shin, or what we're going to call the shok, would not be above the regel. There'd be something else that was above the regel, and then the shok would be above the regel. Had you thought that it was another bone, there was another joint in there, then the istavira, the ankle, would be above the foot, Vishaka, and the shok, mi'al de mi'al, would be above that. Vashimar, filu tema mifsak posik, even if you say there's another joint in there, there's another bone in there, called the hadekara kekaradami, anything that's on the plane of the foot is considered to be like the foot. So anything that's on level or plane with the foot, that's considered the foot. Anything above that will be then mi'al raglo. And the first thing above that, above the ankle, is the shok, right, is that shin bone. Now what's important from this, as Rashi points out, in terms of the anatomy of the person, you have a yerech, which comes down from the hip until the knee. You have from the knee until the ankle is called the shok. And then you have from the ankle to the end of the toes is called the regel. So that's Minatorah. Minatorah, regel is the foot. Shok is the shin area till the knee. And then from the knee until the hip, the femur is the yerech. And that has nafkaminot halacha as well. Because we know the din is shok b'isha erva. That a shok by a woman is considered to be an erva. If you define the shok as being doing the knee and the ankle, that means that the woman must cover the area between the knee and the ankle. And over here, it seems from this Gemara, as well as Rashi's interpretation over here, that shok is what's between the knee and the ankle. There is a machloket in the Gemara, in the Chulin, as well as some other places between the Tosfot and Rashi, as to what the definition of the shok is for an animal versus that which it is for a human being. And therefore, the question about the shok and what the meaning of shok v'isha erva will be defined by that machloket. If you think the shok is the same as the shok of the animal, then it would be higher up. Whereas if you think it's differentiated, then you would think that the shok is from the knee to the ankle. And again, that has nafkamina as to what the woman must cover. If the shok is defined as the thigh, then she only has to cover it down past her knees. If shok is defined as till the ankles, then she would also have to cover the area between her knee and her ankles.
The implication here is that we didn't have theory for years that may have found a skeleton just to examine and understand what bones where and whatever. We're learning now.
It doesn't literally mean it goes to the ground, but I mean that's the last joint between the foot and the shin. There's no other joint that's there. There's a lachik din of going to the ground, not that it's literally reaches the ground. You have your heel underneath the ankle, so obviously it's not the case that the ankle joins to the ground, but it's the only joint between the foot and the leg. Right? Dmeya dialai. It says that the value of my arm, I'm going to donate. Sheminoto kamahu shaveh biyad ubelo yad. We assess how much he's worth with the arm and without the arm. This is the difference between nadarim and arachim. By arachim, you would pay nothing, because this is not a limb shenishamat kuyaba. So it's not a limb shenishamat kuyaba. It's as if you said nothing. By nidarim, we take your word literally. Whatever you said you're going to donate, we're going to take it literally and assess that value. So eicha shaminin lei. How do we assess it? Amaraba omdimoto omed shel nizakim. We assess him like you would do it by an injury. So a person who's injured, an individual who damages their friend, somehow cuts off the arm of his friend to pay for his nizakim, we assess this individual, how much he would sell in the shuk now, and how much he would have sold in the shuk if he had his arm, and that difference is the nezik that is nigram over here, that's the damage that's been caused over here. So Rabbi says, we'll assess it the same way here. Look at him, what he's worth right now, and look at him, what he's worth without that arm on. So Amar Abaye, midomi. How can you compare the two? Hotam gavra zilohu, hocha gavra shviyahu. Here again, machloket Rashi and Tosafot. Rashi says it's just a perception issue. If you're looking at an individual with two arms, totally whole, and you're assessing their value, and then you ask them, how much would you pay for this individual with the arm missing? They will overestimate the person with his both arms on. On the other hand, by nizakin, it'll be the other way around. The perception will be you're looking at an individual without an arm. So then you're going to take their valuation down because you're looking at someone without an arm. And then when you assess them on a full basis and say, whatever, they had an arm, you're not going to come to the same valuation. Abaye's point is, according to Rashi, is that that perception is going to change what the valuation comes out. It depends what you're looking at. You're looking at the person whole, or you're looking at the person missing. And then you're trying to assess the other side of it. If someone missing, what would they look like whole, or whole, what would they look like without an arm? So over there, Rabbi is claiming that the valuation will not work out. On the other hand, Tosafot says it's not a perception issue, it's a real issue. V'nir l'ri, da'acha perish, amar lo abai, mi domi otam gabra ziluhu gabi nizakim, shrei shenikta yado hu nim'as yoter, v'shalio yad v'nikshar. Hey, there's two different ways to assess over here. The nizakim, you're assessing an individual where their arm has been severed, and therefore they don't have an arm. So not only are they lost the function of the arm, their appearance is also something that is disconcerting. And therefore, you're going to lower the value of the person because not only are they missing the function of the arm, they look funny. On the other hand, if you have a person who is whole with both arms, and now you're asking, if we tie his one arm behind his back, how much is he worth? He can't function with that arm. We're taking away the function of the arm. You're going to over-assess over there. He still looks like a normal person being, but just tying his arm so that he can't use it. So he says you're going to come up with different valuations that way. So Tosafot, the Ri, says it's a real difference in valuation. Because not only is there a loss of function, but there's also the appearance issue, and the appearance issue will lower the valuation. Whereas Rashi says it's just the perception issue, and therefore the values will come out different because of the perception, but Eino Chanami, it really should be the same. Say, how much does a person want to pay for an Eved that does his work with one arm? That an Eved that does it with two arms. So Gemara says, Yado achat mainu, v'idach psika. So what is the one arm that we're talking about? V'idach psika. And it's as if the other one's cut off. So Gemara says, yeah, hainohach, Abai, you sound like Rava again. When you're saying the assessment of what an eved looks like with one arm on and two arms on, then aren't you back to Rava? Eliyado muchtevet the rabo rishon. We're talking about a case where his arm is still belongs to his first master. His master sold him except for one arm. So the question is, what would someone pay for that, excluding that arm? And that'll give us the value, but not that his arm's missing. His arm's still there. So because the way Abai was describing it before, he's getting back to Rava's explanation, which is that we're going to find out how much is eved worth with two arms on and eved worth with one arm on. That's back to the same thing again. Well, Rashi's just pointing out, if Rashi says it's a perception issue, you're going to assess him when he has two arms on, you're going to look at him and you're going to make an assessment. But Tosafot says that there's a real issue. He's only, one of his arms is tied up, it's blocked, but it's still there, it still appears like a normal eved. Now, in terms for us, this seems very strange, but in their day, if you have an active slave trade, with an active slave trade, you would know. People get sold, people are getting sold and bought all the time. You had some sense of what people cost, what the value people were with different deformities or different problems. We don't have that, so today it doesn't seem so foreign. How do you assess such a thing? Bai Rava, Amdua Omeid Shal Nizakim. What happens if they made the assessment for Nizakim, which is done with a Beis Din of 3, Vamar Dmei Alai, and then he says, I'm going to donate the value of my arm to the Mikdash, Mahu. Miyamar Hamdu, Chadazimna, do we say they already assessed the value of his arm, let's pay it? Udilma Shaina Umduna Debe Asara, Mi Umduna Debe Tlata. Maybe there's a difference between Kodoshim, which require 10 people. That's because the word Kohen is written 10 times in Vayikra, Perachav Zayin. It talks about the Kohen being Marich 10 times. It says the word Kohen. Each one of them is a Miyut, Achar Miyut, the Rabot. That means that you can have 93 Elim in one Kohen. In order to assess Kodshim. So it says Kodshim, you need 10. By Nizakim, you only need 3. So you already had Nezek to his arm. If he had Nezek to his arm, and he got assessed by 3 people, will that stand? Will that be good enough an assessment when he says, Demei Alai? Is that good enough? Because he really needs 10 over here. Now, Imtim Salom Arshani Umdana Be'asar, Umdana Be'atlato. The 10 is different than 3. Amar Demei Alai. He donated to Hegdesh Ramdua with 10. Chazar Amar Demei Alai. And then again, he went ahead and donated again his arm. Mau. Hacha vaday amdua be'asara. Over here, 10 people assessed him. Odilma shevach debeni ubeni. Maybe his value changed in the interim, so we can't rely on the first assessment. Then again, imtim salomar, if you want to say over here at this point that there is a difference between the two assessments, then amar dmei alai velo amdua. He donated the value of his arm to the mikdash. V'chazav amar dmei alai, and he donated again. Mau. What's the din over here? He comes, maybe over here you can assess them all at once. He's coming before us with 2 nidarim, we have to assess them. Odilma came into Zechazer Nadar, Trey Zimnin Amdinanle. Or maybe because he took 2 separate nidarim, he has to have 2 separate assessments. Vim Tim Salomar, if you want to say, came into Zechazer Nadar, Trey Zimne Amrinan. It's because he said, Zechazer, we have to assess him twice. Amar Shnei Dmei Alai, Bavadachat, Mau. He says, 2 times the value of my arm, I'm going to donate to the Mikdash. What's the din? Since he took 1 nether, then he can do 1 assessment. Odilma came into Kamar Shnei, maybe because he says twice the value, it's as if he made 2 separate nidarim. So now, Imtam Salomar, if you want to say came into Kamar Shnei, Shnei is Kazachazedami, when he says 2, it's as if he said it sequentially, then Amdua Me'elav Mahu. If he got assessed for some other reason, nothing to do with the Mikdash, nothing, they happen to make an assessment of it. Mi Aminan Hay Amid Me'alav V'koi. He already had an assessment done, and therefore we can use that for the value. Od Bil Mabinan Kavanah Lu Umdana. Or do you have to have specific Kavanah that you're assessing him for this specific event? So Poshim Mihachado. Let's at least answer one of these questions, meaning the last one. And as Tosfot points out, you didn't have, this question could stand on its own. Question of Amdua Me'alav could stand on its own. You don't have to have it be an Imtim Salomar. It just happens to be that the Gemara is going through a series of questions and says Imtim Salomar. But the question is a standalone question, even without the Imtim Salomar, which is that when you've had an assessment done that was not specifically done for Hekdesh, can you use that assessment? Again, assuming it was done with 10 people, and it's a good assessment, just wasn't done for the intent of Hekdesh. We say we can at least be poshate that thing, meet the Tanan. We have a Mishnah, Dmei Alai, Umeit. Person says, my value, I'm going to donate to the Mikdash, and he dies. Lo itnu yoshim. Yoshim don't give it, ein damim lemeitim. There's no value to someone who's dead, so there's nothing to pay. V'isagadavcha amdua me'elav, havei umdana. So if you want to say that someone who had an assessment done before they came to donate to the Mikdash, that was a good umdana, ha'amid v'koyi. A live person is worth at least something. He's at least worth 4 zuz. He's worth something at least. How can the Yoshim get away with paying nothing? Yes, when he's dead, he's worth nothing. but he was alive, that means he was worth at least something. So why don't they have to pay at least something to the Mikdash? So the proof from that is that we don't care any assessment that you've had until that point in time. Must be that we only determine by now, the here and now, and you have to get a new assessment. Gemara says, wait a minute. Cases are totally different. In the case where he had an assessment done, he actually did. There was an assessment done. Just now question if that's applicable to Kodshim. Dmei Alai, in our Mishnah over there, we said, Dmei Alai Nachid Umdana. He never had an assessment done. So to say, after he's dead, we're going to go back and assume there was a value to him, that's not called an assessment. You need an assessment to pay Kodshim. So even though when he dies, we say that Yoshim owed nothing because there was never an assessment done, that doesn't prove to anything about when there was an assessment done, just not done for Hekdesh. There's a big difference between those. One case you do have an assessment, one case you don't have an assessment. We don't make an assumed value. But here we know what the value is. There was an assessment done. There's a question, do you need Kavana or you don't need Kavana? And therefore, from that Mishnah, we can't prove anything about our case. And therefore, we leave all of these as a teku, unanswered questions as to what the din would be.